But she had a beautiful face. And naturally, a woman that is deformed like this would not be a very attractive woman. But Krishna came to her and gave her his blessings. Trivakra, which is her name mentioned here, and is also another name of Kubja, means that she was bent in three places. She was bent in the neck, the chest, and waist. So she was really in a bad situation, all bent. And that she also represents an expansion of Satyabhama. And this expansion, Prithivi, means that she represents the earth. And because the earth was being burdened by these impious kings, Krishna came to straighten her up and also at the same time send the message that I'm going to kill all these impious kings. It's a double meaning here. And it's interesting how Krishna did this, because he stepped on her toes with his both feet. So that in itself is, you know, extremely transcendental and pleasant, to have the Supreme Lord walk into your house or a store and suddenly steps on your toes, and then with these two indicator fingers, he pushed her up here, stretched. You know, this is what I would call all-in-one, non-invasive surgery and a physical therapy without MRI altogether. You know, so he got her all straightened up without any effort. So this is not an usual thing to do. And actually, it's interesting that one may say, oh, how could somebody do this? But actually, there are people that do things like this even today. In Brazil, there's a man that does this kind of operation like this, non-invasive operation with some kind of power. So why Krishna cannot have the power to straighten her body and make her perfect? And also it's explained later in the chapter that she became very beautiful, and all the limbs of her body were proportionally set. Now, it explains about her breast and her thighs and everything. And then, of course, after Krishna doing that, before Krishna doing this, she was already completely in love with Krishna just by seeing him, as were all the inhabitants of Mathura. Everybody, Krishna walking, everybody is completely in love with him. And after this, she told Krishna, please come to my house. She immediately said like this. And then Krishna looked at Balaram and looked at the coward boys, because they were like many of them walking together doing sightseeing. It was not just Krishna and Balaram. The coward boys were with them as well. So it doesn't say here how many, but we should assume that there were many of them, because Krishna had many friends. And Krishna looked at the coward boys, looked at Balaram, and told her, but now what will people think of this? And she said, I'm sorry, I can't help. It was your fault that you tortured me. Now I can't help, you must come to my house. I cannot afford to leave you here. She said, I cannot afford to leave you in this place. So she was completely insistent that Krishna, I'm going to take you home with me. And then Krishna told her, well, I have some business to take care of. But after I take care of this business, I assure you, I will come to visit you. And he says, Agrihanam. And it's explained in the purport, when he used the word Agrihanam, means that on the translation it says, because, we are homeless. No, we don't have a fixed home. But it's explained by the disciples of Prabhupada that when he says the word Agrihanam, means that we not only don't have a fixed residence, I'm not married either. Krishna said, Agrihanam, I'm not married either. So kind of he gave her some hope. Yes, no problem. You know. But now, it's interesting when he says that I'm not married either, because I don't know exactly how old Krishna was here. I was trying to find out. Does anybody know? But he wasn't that old. I think he was 10 years old. 10 or 11 years old. And one may think, why should a boy come to you that is 10 or 11 years old and say, I'm not married? That they would think, but that doesn't make any sense. You know? So I would like to read you something. This is from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Swalikita Jivani, it's quite interesting. Please pay attention. Listen. The marriage, Swalikita Jivani is that his autobiography. Okay. The marriage was decided. Dasu Mama acted as the head of the family. Nanda Kumar began to make the jewelry. Stealing a large amount of gold from mother, he made different kinds of ornaments for the girl, enough to cover her entire body. Dasu Mama gave the approval for everything. The expense was great. There was a pleasure boat, a wedding palanquin. So this is his wedding. He's describing his wedding, you know. Decorations, lights, English music, etc. Actually, in this autobiography, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he admired very much how the English women dressed. They had those long dresses and they were like armed. He mentions it. There was a pleasure boat, a wedding palanquin, decorations, lights, English music, etc. The marriage was between a 12-year-old boy and a 5-year-old girl. So he was 12 and the girl was 5. So even recently, in the sense compared to Krishna's appearance 5,000 years ago, even recently, a 12-year-old boy was marrying a 5-year-old girl. And actually, he says that when it came the time to go to his in-law's house, he told his parents, I cannot go alone. I need to go with my nanny. My nanny has to come with me. So she went with him. He was so young, you know. So when Krishna says that, no, I'm not married, so it was, we understand that people could marry at that age, at that time. And also, we see here in the verses that will come, that Krishna actually says very nice and sweet things to Trivakra. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord, there's a verse about the austerity of speech, where Krishna says, Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priya hitam chayat swajaya vyashanam chaiva vamayam tapauchate. Tapauchate. No. Vamayam tapauchate. That the austerity of the tongue is to speaking words that are truthful. Now, it doesn't mean that speaking words that are truthful, you come to somebody and say, you are really ugly. Yeah. It cannot be like that, because Krishna says then that not only truthful, but they are pleasing words. The words have to be pleasing as well. Yeah. And actually, in one of the verses in this chapter, even before doing the all-in-one, non-invasive surgery in Trivakra, Krishna told her that you look so beautiful. And it's explained in the purport that this was a joke, but was not a malicious joke, because Krishna already knew that he was going to make her beautiful. So Krishna was telling her pleasing words and beneficial that would help her, would encourage her. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, the preachers have a very important position, because a preacher can make or can break. When the preacher opens his mouth, he can completely discourage someone to serve Krishna, or he can completely encourage someone to serve Krishna. I was doing a search on the Veda base, how many times Prabhupada wrote letters that he said, I'm very happy. And I read and read and read, and I could not get to the end, because there were so many encouraging letters saying, I'm very happy that you are distributing books. I'm very happy that you were worshipping the deities. I'm very happy that in such a young age you went to another country and you were preaching Krishna consciousness. And he goes on and on and on and on. Actually, Hansadutta Prabhu, he explains that when he was in Germany, he was alone. And Prabhupada would send letters constantly. And many times he was discouraged to go out. And the only time he went out is to go to the mailbox to get mail from Prabhupada. And then he would get encouraged, and then he would go out and preach, and gradually his enthusiasm would decline, and he would stay home again, and then the next letter would come, and he would go out and preach. And there is also another instance when Garga Muni was in Hong Kong, and he wrote to Prabhupada, people are not interested here, Prabhupada. There is nothing happening here. There's no preaching happening here. I think it's better you send me to another place. So he had this apartment. And Prabhupada wrote back, I understand that nothing is happening, that not much preaching is happening. It's okay. Then you just stay inside the apartment and chant Hare Krishna. And that is going to be enough to purify the entire Hong Kong. So he was always encouraging them. Always encouraging. And he was always admiring, saying something nice. Giriraj Swami says that when his mother, Mrs. Titan, and his father, Mr. Titan, went to Bombay to meet with Prabhupada, the story is that they went to Bombay because they wanted to take their son home. That was the idea. And Mr. Titan was a big lawyer in Chicago. Sorry. So they went there, and they sat down with Prabhupada. And I heard this story from Srinathji directly, who was there. And Mr. Titan said, Prabhupada. And Giriraj came to his ear and said, it's not Prabhupada, it's Prabhupada. We came here to take our son home. We're taking him home with us. Prabhupada said, Giriraj, would you like to go home? Giriraj said, Prabhupada, there's no power in this world that can separate me from you. So what a beautiful statement. No power in this world. And Prabhupada said, he doesn't want to go. But Prabhupada told him, but Giriraj, but I think you should go on vacation with your parents. Now, Giriraj was a brahmachari, and we heard him saying here in Alatra that he was afraid even to go out of the temple because he would be distracted by the billboards and people walking, so he liked to stay inside the temple. And suddenly Prabhupada said to him, why don't you go on vacation with your parents? And they were going to Singapore. And Giriraj was surprised. Prabhupada, vacation? Yes, go on vacation with your parents. So he went on vacation with them. And then they came back, and Srinathaji's parents, who were part of the high society of Mumbai or Bombay on those days, introduced their friends, and everybody was happy. And so much so that when Mrs. Titan left her body, she donated a lot of money to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, and whoever has been to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, there is the Titan Eye Clinic that was sponsored by her. You see how Prabhupada was so encouraging? And when Prabhupada met them for the first time, Prabhupada told Mrs. Titan, oh, you look so young. And naturally, and all you tell a woman that you look so young, and she feels happy. You know, Prabhupada was wise to make people happy. Why not? If you can say some sweet words and nice words, and the person will feel good, why not say? You know? And when Shruta Kirti was massaging Prabhupada's body, and Prabhupada was seated on the lotus position, and Shruta Kirti was also seated on the lotus position, he noticed that Prabhupada was looking at his feet. Was not only looking, was staring at his feet. So he felt a little uncomfortable. And suddenly Prabhupada broke the silence and said, is your mother beautiful? Out of the blue, is your mother beautiful? And Shruta Kirti said, well, no, she's older, but when she was young, yeah, she was very beautiful. Because in India we say that when the son has a beautiful feet, the mother is beautiful. So very encouraging. You know, how can you imagine how Shruta Kirti felt listening to something like this? And how the devotees who received a letter from Prabhupada, an encouraging letter with sweet words, with pleasing words, how they felt. And how their wives felt, and their children, and their friends when they saw the letter. On the old days, when the letter came from Prabhupada, everybody got around the person receiving the letter to, what is it? What did he say? Yeah. And actually, I have a project in my mind that I would like to go over all the letters that Prabhupada wrote and calculate how many were encouraging and how many were punishing, because the spiritual master sometimes has to punish the disciple as well. And I have a gut feeling that a large percentage is just encouraging letters. Encouraging. And making people enthusiastic. You know, that I'm so happy that you were doing this. That you said you were American boys and girls and you came to India without any comfort. I'm so happy that you were serving here, even in such difficult circumstances. I'm so happy that you're dedicating all your youth in the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, spreading the Sankirtan movement, you're distributing these books, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. So we see here how the Krishna, Lord Krishna himself, he goes to a hunchback and tells her that he was so beautiful. He will tell you later. You know? Imagine how she felt. You know? And we want some of your ointment. Would you be kind to give some to us? It's of course to take the whole inventory. You know, it's no problem. You know? And it's explained that Krishna ointed his body with a yellow ointment and Balaram with a blue ointment. And then again they were sightseeing in Vrindavan. Actually, it's so important to encourage people. Many years ago, it may be 15 years or even longer than that, I read in New York City research that was published in the Newsday newspaper. And the question was, why people stay in their jobs? Why they don't change jobs? And the number one reason was because it wasn't money. It wasn't money, the number one reason. The number one reason was because they felt appreciated by the manager. Very important to appreciate. And also, I don't know if you know this, the number one suicide place in the world is in the U.S. Do you know where that place is? No. It's the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. Okay, that bridge was built in 1937 by an architect, engineer, Mr. Strauss. And he wrote that this bridge is practically suicide-proof. It's unlikely that anybody will be able to commit suicide from this bridge. It's probably illogical. But since then, over 1,600 people committed suicide on that bridge. And on a speech by one of the officers that patrols that bridge, or patrolled for 25 years, and then he retired, telling some of these stories, he tells the story of this man, David, who was 32 years old. And when he was called, David was already on the edge of the bridge, which is just a few inches, and from there you go down. And it says that you go down at 75 miles per hour, and when you hit the water, all your bones break. And if you don't die with the impact, then you just drown and die right there, without hope. So David, this was the third time he had come to commit suicide all the way from New Jersey. The first two times, somehow he didn't. Now it's the third time. And he's talking to the officer. Have you heard about the Pandora box? The officer said, he was asking the officer. And the officer said, yes. So the Pandora box was sent with a girl from heaven by Zeus, the Greek god Zeus, to earth. But he told her, you never open it. You know what happens when you say something like this, no? So what did she do? The first thing she did when she got to earth, she opened it. And all kinds of bad omens and problems walked out of the box. But there was one thing left in the box. Do you know what was it? It was hope. Hope was left in the box. So he is telling the officer the story. And then he asked the officer, but what about when you can't find hope? What do you do? And he said that, and he turned around, and he's gone. So many people in this world, they have no hope. And we are their hope. Actually, in a walk at a park in London, Prabhupada walked by some beggars, homeless people. This story was told by Braj Bihari Prabhu. from England. And I'm trying to remember the story exactly, so maybe not completely exactly, but the meaning is right. And a devotee said that it's their fortune that you're walking by them, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, it's their good fortune. And Braj Bihari, who was trying to ask a question to Prabhupada, but never had the guts to do it, suddenly he came forward and said, but Prabhupada, I thought, no, it has to do with karma. So what good fortune has to do with this? And Prabhupada said, well, we are their good fortune. Without us, they don't have good fortune. So in this world, it's like this. Without the Krishna consciousness movement, like it's explained, when Krishna left this world, he left the Bhagavatam behind. And the Bhagavatam is the good fortune of this world. And giving the Krishna consciousness is the good fortune of this world. Unfortunately, our resources are limited to go and give displeasing knowledge to people everywhere. I like analysis and numbers. It's just in my nature. So there are 7,000 institutions of higher education in the world. 7,000. This research is from 2007, from the book The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman, business writer for the New York Times. So it may be a little different now. But 7,000. And out of those 7,000 in the world, 4,000 are in America. Now, a question for you. How many have Krishna lunch of the 4,000? Any significant number? Yes or no? And there's 4,000 universities, they have libraries. And at one point we had the library party. I don't know if we have the library party now, I'm not sure. But how many have all this, collection of Prabhupada's books of these 4,000 universities? So people are starving for these blessings. Now on that same bridge in San Francisco, Golden Gate Bridge, many other people were saved. And this officer explains that the people that were saved, there's a young man that was about to commit suicide, and he started talking to the officer. And he was talking for an hour and a half. And the officer was listening. And then finally, he decided not to commit suicide. And when the officer was asking him, why did you decide that? He said, because you listened to me. Because you listened to me. There's a saying that there's a reason why God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth. Because he wanted us to listen twice as much as them to talk. And Prabhupada was an extremely good listener. At the beginning on 26 Second Avenue, one day, Kirtanananda came to Prabhupada and said, I think we are all God. I think the impersonalist philosophy is right. And I think this Vaishnava philosophy is wrong. And Umapati, I heard this from Umapati. Umapati said that he never saw Prabhupada like this. Suddenly he started getting red. Started getting angry. You could see by his face. And Kirtananda kept going on and on and on, explaining the impersonalist philosophy. And then at one point, Prabhupada says, are you finished? And Kirtananda says, no. And he continues. And then again, after some time, Prabhupada said, are you finished? And said, yes. And then Prabhupada says, because of this, and this, and this, this impersonalist philosophy is wrong, is misleading. And Prabhupada goes on and on. And Umapati said, and that is what actually saved us. But before speaking, he was listening for a long time. And he had this demeanor, this practice of saying, are you finished? And one day I used Prabhupada's technique. A crazy man came to my store. And in the middle of other customers, started talking very loudly, all kinds of nonsense things. And I let him talk and talk and talk and talk. And then I said, "Are you finished?" And he said, "Yes." "So now you get out of here before I call the police." And he left immediately without saying anything else. The Prabhupada technique is amazing. So I remembered Prabhupada. So two important things we can learn from this chapter and from this story of Trivakra is that we should never miss the opportunity to eulogize, to encourage the devotees of the Lord or anybody to become engaged in the service of the Lord. Another nice story. With Jayapataka Swami and the one that established the Ratha Yatra, just forgot his name, Jayananda. The first time Jayapataka Swami visited the temple, they were building the Ratha Yatra cart. So Jayananda invited him to go there and help. Gave him a hammer and a nail. And Jayapataka Swami said, "I had never held a hammer and a nail in my hand." And Jayananda said, "So you're going to put this, you're going to nail it right here." So he did once. Jayananda said, "My God, you are a professional carpenter." And he said he felt so encouraged. He said, "Nobody ever encouraged me like this." So we should never miss the opportunity to encourage the Vaishnavas. And we should minimize the punishment for a special occasion. Sometimes punishment is necessary. And Prabhupada explains in the purport of that verse that says, explains about the austerities of the tongue, that a master sometimes, he has to punish the disciple for the disciple's benefit. But it doesn't mean that if you are not a master, you go punishing everybody. Let me read Prabhupada's exact words on this. Here is one should speak in such a way as one should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction of his students, but such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. So we should remember these two things from this chapter. They're extremely important for our own benefit, for pleasing Krishna, and for encouraging everyone to proceed in the path of devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If you have any questions, any comments, you're welcome to do so. I'm happy you're encouraged, even with me speaking. You must be a saintly woman. And your husband must be a saintly man.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Very nice class. I was just reminded of a little thing which my son was telling me. He came back from the Festival of Inspiration this past week. And he was saying on the bus, this Prabhu was, you know, anything anybody did, Sachinandan Prabhu. He said he was saying such good things, you know, such good things. Anybody was doing a little bit and he was encouraging and saying really nice things. And he said it was kind of odd.
Sachinanda has this nature.
And he
said, has this
feeling
nature.
Uncomfortable. And I was feeling, wow, such a nice thing that he's actually, he's noticing, and you have to be very present to be able to do that, to be able to encourage and appreciate devotees, appreciate anyone who's people around you. But I was trying to tell that to my son, that it is actually, it's a very positive trait that one can have, that you encourage and you actually, as a manager, like he's managing this bus store, so he has to involve a lot of people in the Rath Yatra, you know, coordinating everything for Rath Yatra or taking people out. So a manager, that's a very good trait in a manager.
He is the perfect man for the job.
Yes.
And he was sent by Krishna to help us with this because I was there. I was in that bus as well. And he is always encouraging everyone. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? I just want to mention one pastime of Prabhupada, because we need to know how to measure, not to have the common sense of measuring when to go this far, when to, you know, it's not an easy thing. It requires a lot of common sense. So one time, Brahmananda and Gargamuni's mother came to see Prabhupada. So they got the only chair that was available, 26 Second Avenue, and they brought for her, and she sat down, and Prabhupada is talking to her. And then at one point, Prabhupada said, no, it would be nice if you give a donation to our movement. And she said, donation? I already gave you 2 sons. What else, whatever other donation you want me to give? And Prabhupada said, oh yeah, it's okay. So immediately he gave up. He did not insist, you know. So we need to know how to have that common sense. And Prabhupada was an expert on this. He knew when to stop, you know, and not make the person uncomfortable. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Very good.